Someone once asked me who my favorite podcast guest was of all time. I've had the opportunity to interview over 100 different guests for podcasts over the years, and I replied, Tom Howard. I don't know why that was my first reaction, but there's something about Tom Howard that I just love. Can't figure out what it is. Maybe you'll figure it out on this episode. So enjoy this conversation with my friend Tom Howard. Tom is the VP of Customer Experience from ServiceTitan. I think he mentioned on this episode he owns or is an investor in 5 or 6 different home service companies, including Lee's Air Conditioning in Fresno, that he grew from 1.6 million to 15 million in just a few short years. So thank you for tuning in to the Change Your Filter podcast with Tall Paul, and enjoy this conversation with our friend Tom Howard. I cannot believe that you took a meeting at 5 or 5:30 in the morning Pacific time. It's 8:30 here where I'm recording in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it's early for me. I have to like relearn how to tie my shoes at 5 in the morning. I'm not against getting up. I just don't take meetings. So thank you, Tom. Welcome to the Change Your Filter podcast.
No problem. Thank you. You know, with working at ServiceTitan full time, my meetings there start at 8 or 9 a.m. And they usually go till about 5 or 6 p.m., at least the meetings there. And then I've got work to do after that. So if I want to run my business or do stuff like this, my meetings typically for Lee's or my other companies, Fetch Attack or something like that, if I go visit my company down here in Beverly Hills called Brody Pinnell, I usually get there at 5:30 or 6. But I actually wake up typically around 5 and I start exercising and then have my first meeting at 6. So having a meeting at 5:30 is totally normal and kind of necessary if you want to fit all the stuff in.
Do you feel like this is a season of your life where you've got this window of time where you're just not going to sleep for a decade? Or is this just the way that Tom Howard operates?
I think this is a time and a season. I haven't really figured out when the next season is or what that looks like, but I'm 38 years old and I like doing what I'm doing. I was, talking to people about, they're like, wow, like, aren't you just exhausted with work at the end of the day? And I said, you know what? How many of you have gone to Disneyland with your kids? And a bunch of people said yes. I said, okay, well, you know, at the end of a day, you get there at 8 a.m., it's 8 o'clock at night, right? You've been going 12 hours at Disneyland. How many of your kids are like, you know, Mom, Dad, we've had a long day. I think we're just going to call it early and just go home at 8 o'clock. Now, they're like, my kids will fall flat on their face, pass out, and like I'll try to pick them up. And I'm like, oh, Dad, one more ride, just one more, we're fine. And they'll keep going. I said, if you can get to the point where you enjoy what you do as much as your kids enjoy Disneyland, they're not counting the hours of like how many they put in a day. They're counting how many they have left and trying to jam in as much as they can before the end. And definitely, at least with working with contractors and then running my contracting business, that's how I feel.
What a great analogy. I can identify with that. You run it till midnight, pass out, get up, do it again with joy, exhausted. It's a good pain. So let me ask this just selfishly. You know, I forgot about Brody Pinnell. Like, I didn't even realize your whole roster before coming into this. Now I'm remembering that. Do you ever feel like you're letting, or that you could let someone down because you have so much going on and so many priorities? Like, how do you manage people's expectations of your time?
Well, first of all, Brody Pinnell, I will let other people down. Brody Pinnell has got a great operator over there. They operate on their own. They don't need me that much. So they're the ones I worry about the least. In fact, when I show up there, they kind of look at me like, what are you doing? Like, why are you here? We have, you know, meetings about budget and things. But anyway, on everything else, Vahe Kazoyan, the president of ServiceTitan, he and I were talking at his house once. And I just kind of said, look, you know, I get worried that I'm going to let people down. And he said, well, you're taking on a lot. You're trying to do things that most people wouldn't even sign up to do. And you're like, not only did you sign up, you've been doing it for a year now. This is back a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah. He's like, for me, I wake up in the morning and I just tell myself, today I'm probably going to let people down. And I'm okay with that. He's like, yeah. It's the consequence of trying to do what you're doing. And yeah. He's like, but a lot of the time you don't let people down, you get a lot done. So I was really inspired by it. I think if we constantly worry about, oh, if I take this on, I'll let somebody down. I don't think we'll push ourselves enough to try things. Another thing that I heard once is like, imagine what you could do if you weren't afraid of failure. I think a lot of times we don't take something because we're afraid of failing. Now, my executive coach would also tell me, he's like, hey, when you've taken too much on, you need to know what to cut. But I think if you're not afraid of like saying, hey, I've taken on too much, I need to get out of something, then you've met that point where you've taken on too much and you can back it off. But I think a lot of people never even hit it.
You mentioned your executive coach, and that's perfect timing. I wanted to talk to you about that. What is the role of your coach? Who is it? How do you guys communicate? What's that look like?
Yeah, I was actually told I needed one when I got to Service Titan, which is kind of funny. I must have.
Tell me more there. Was that just like a, here's your post-it notes, here's your name badge, and you need a coach? Or was there an event that led to, hey, Tom, we need to work on your swing a little bit.
It might have been it's probably the latter. A lot of us, it's really great though. I mean, once I swallowed my pride and did it. My executive coach is actually Keith Mercurio. He was worked at Nextar for a long time, knows this guy, speaks very highly of them. I think he has two or three of us on the executive team that he coaches, and then the others have different coaches. And anyway, he meets with me every other week, and you go into all kinds of stuff. I mean, in the beginning, you're talking about your childhood and what happened there. It's a lot like a counseling or therapy session. Mm-hmm. You start digging into why you respond to people in the workplace certain ways, how you respond, how you react to things, how you would, if I've got to go into a big meeting and or contract negotiation or something like that, he's going to sit me down and say, all right, let's go through this and let's look at what angle you're coming at this problem from. How would you respond to this? How would you respond to that? Talks me through it, gives me feedback on how it sounds. It's really quite, it's quite good. I mean, Keith and I had a little bit of a fallout when we first met. I didn't agree with some of the stuff that he was saying and things.
Can you give me an example?
Just not to, because it would be my twist on it. I don't know if I want to go too much into that, but basically.
That's Keith's coaching, by the way, that just played out for listeners. Tom is getting ready to describe a situation, and he prefaced it with, it is my twist on the situation that's going to describe this narrative. That's a Keith coaching. Okay. So let's hear it from
you. Be careful though. So, trying not to do that is basically he was doing a seminar for us at Service Titan. For just the executives. And there was, I think at the time there was 11 executives, and with the way he was doing it, I wasn't real happy with it. And I had only been at Service Titan for 2 months. And especially back then, I was just getting into this and thinking, well, I owned a business and no one can tell me what to do kind of thing. And I don't need to be here, whatever. And kind of had that attitude. And it still shines through sometimes. It's difficult having and still owning a business and having to go answer to somebody else. Anyway, so we're going through this thing and I started to let him know how I felt about the whole situation. And after a while it became very public in front of everybody. And I, wasn't too happy. Anyway, we got through that and talking about it, I look back, it's like, if I just sit down and shut up and like took in what was happening and started applying it, none of that would have happened. And I probably would have gotten a lot better, a lot faster out of it. And so, we had to have executive coaches and I called him and said, look, like if this is your thing, like, can you do mine? He's like, sure. So yeah, we started talking after that. And, we've been working together now for about 2 years. And it's, I would tell you, the problem with coaches is quality control. You know, there's a 100 coaches out there. It's just like SEO companies. It seems like every high school kid with a laptop is an SEO expert all of a sudden. Same thing with, you know, people have life coaches, executive coaches, whatever, therapists, however you want to look at it. And I think it's, you know, you just got to make sure you've got one that knows what they're doing. Yeah, and it's helped me a ton.
What's been the biggest tool or resource that you draw from as it relates to Keith's coaching over the years? Is there a framework he's given you or?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest things that we've gotten into that has really made me think a lot is basically understanding why you respond to things in given ways.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't a big believer in this kind of thing in the past, but we went back into how I grew up, where I grew up, why, you know, and things like that. And then I remember this one situation when I was a kid, and it's pretty private, so I can't go into that too much, but, it was a tough situation. We're looking back on the first time in your life when you knew, something was wrong, you know, 'cause when you're a kid, nothing's wrong or right. It's just is. And then you have a time where it hits and it usually affects the way you make your decisions for the rest of your life. And so then I start looking at it and what your brain does is it overcompensates to avoid that particular situation. Right.
Right. Yeah.
And it makes you do things that are totally illogical and irrational because your brain is basically programmed to, hey, let's avoid that, you know? Yeah. And it becomes detrimental to you if you keep letting it go throughout your life, but you don't even know that it's affecting you. And then all of a sudden you start looking at like all the decisions I'm making and especially the ones that put me in a situation that are tough and I'm stressed out and everything else. And it's like, oh shoot, that's why. So yeah. Going through that, I mean, that was literally over a year ago. We went through that exercise and now, we call it 5-year-old Tom because it happened when I was about 5 years old.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh shoot, 5-year-old Tom is coming back in here.
Yeah.
You know, time to put 5-year-old Tom in the corner and, you know, let 38-year-old Tom make better decisions here. 'Cause 5-year-old Tom is basically pushing me here to do X, Y, Z. 'Cause I'm trying to avoid this feeling again.
Yeah. You know, I will have completely lost track for the rest of this conversation because I was thinking as you were saying that about like the time that I remember, like things were wrong.
Yeah.
And that's a really profound question because you can usually think back to like that one weird thing that happened where the world looked different.
The funny thing is I can tell you what, I mean, some details about it. Basically, you know, we talked earlier about how, hey, don't be afraid to just say, hey, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things, like I will continually take on more stuff. And then I would not say no when it was too much. Because I was afraid of not having enough and not having that position, not having that whatever. And as soon as I realized, hey, that's 5-year-old Tom trying to make sure that like nothing goes wrong here and trying to appease everybody. And as soon as I realized, well, I don't have to do that. 5-year-old Tom doesn't go away. It's part of your programming. If you look when we have machine learning right now, and build machines to like walk or whatever, let's say, and some of you have seen them online, they train the machine to say, hey, do this when you fall over, do that, you know, whatever. And the machine starts learning and teaching itself how to walk. The problem is if some weird event happens while it's learning, it could really affect the way it walks for the rest of its life. Well, that's what happens to us. So anyway, I'm literally afraid to say no, I'm afraid to do this, afraid of that. And finally, it's still there and I know that event is there, but I also know it's 5-year-old Tom telling me like, oh, you can't say no. You have to keep going. You can't let anyone down. And I'm like, screw it. 5-year-old Tom doesn't want to let people down. 38-year-old Tom says, hey, I'm sorry. I can't make this event. I can't do this. I can't do that, you know, and you do it nicely, but you also free yourself and feel a lot better.
I'm sitting here wondering if it's 5-year-old Tom that said yes to this 5:30 a.m. podcast, West Coast time, or 38-year-old Tom, but that's okay.
Yeah. If I was exhausted right now, I think 38-year-old Tom would say, you know what, let's just call it and cut it. But no, we're literally every day. I typically start walking by 5 a.m., sometimes 4:30, and I get a half an hour to an hour in and I can clear my head. And then I actually start taking my meetings, like I said, by 6 at the latest typically.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And let's talk about tactics, disciplines, daily things. You know, you must go to bed super early. Like, what, you walk at 5 a.m. Like, what are some other things you do to manage your time and be most effective and stay happy?
Yeah. You know what I found was like, gosh, when I was, I went to Hungary for 2 years. I was a religious missionary. I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Some of you guys call it Mormon. So I joined the church when I was almost 18 and it was pretty new to me. And then I went to Hungary for 2 years. So in that time period, when you go to bed every night, almost exactly at 10:30. Mm-hmm. You wake up every day, 7 days a week, including Christmas and New Year's and everything else, at 6:30 a.m. So you get exactly 8 hours of sleep every night.
That is a rule, or that is just a, that's what happened?
That's a rule. When you wake up at 6:30 a.m., you study for an hour on your own. Then you have the person you're living with, you study with them for an hour. Then you have exercise for a half hour. You have language study for a half hour, as learning Hungarian. Then you have showering, breakfast, whatever, for an hour. And then you leave the apartment at 10, or I can't remember. If you add all those times together, it comes out at 10 or 10:30. Yeah. Anyway, and then you go out and you're working until you come home. Anyway, you're either talking to people about the gospel, or you're helping, you have to do service projects or whatever. You figure out how to fill that day with doing that kind of stuff. Except Monday, you get 6 hours, or I think it's 8 hours off from the time you leave it. You still wake up at the same time. You still do your studies, but then you don't have to work until 6:30 that night. And so you get your grocery shopping done, your house cleaning, your other stuff. Anyway, Saturday and Sunday don't matter. You do the same kind of stuff every day. You're obviously, you know, I was 19 to 21 when I did it. You're not dating or anything. There's no time for that. So anyway, it was very regimented, but I looked back and I was like, man, I got a lot of stuff done. Mm-hmm. I added all together. I read 6,000 pages of text while I was out there. And, when I got home, somehow, the wires got crossed with the time changes, and everything. I started waking up at 5:46 a.m. every day. No alarm clock, no nothing. I just like sit up and my eyes are like wide open. It's time to go. Yep. And that's when I realized, hey, you know, if you can push it long enough, and it only takes, by the way, for me now to get programmed like that, a few weeks for a certain time schedule. And then once you do that, it'll just go. And it honestly, even if you go to bed late, last night I had a late night meeting with the service line executives that ended up going. I didn't get home till 11:30 at night, and we went to bed at midnight. And this morning, no alarm clock. I'm waking up, boom, sitting up. It was like 4:50, and it was like, oh, I gotta go. It'll catch up to me if I don't make sure I get my sleep. But now after that, I try to make sure I'm regimented. I try to make sure I go to bed no later than 10 o'clock. Usually it's 9:30. That way, about 4:45, 5 a.m., I'm up at the latest, sometimes 4:30. And you can just go. And if you can do it like that, your body doesn't feel tired when you wake up either, because it's expecting to do this.
Sure.
And you're not dragging yourself out of bed. And I looked at it, gosh, when I used to sleep until, you know, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, I look back, I'm like, you realize that even if you were just out walking for that 4 hours, or if I went for a run for 4 hours, I do some, I do a lot of Spartan races.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, like I could have burnt like, you know, thousands of calories this morning. I could have got healthier. I could have studied something. I mean, you lost all of that because you slept in. And if your body doesn't even want to sleep in, look at how much more productive you can be. So.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest changes I've made is like giving up on 8 hours and just being okay with 7 hours of sleep. And it's bought me so much more peace in my mind, given me more time. I could talk about this stuff. Like, I just find you fascinating. Obviously, I've told someone recently, someone asked me, you know, coming off 100 podcasts with over 100 with To The Point, they said, who's your favorite guest? I was like, Tom Howard. And then I felt bad for the 99 other guests. That was 5-year-old Paul felt really, really bad for not saying they're all my favorite.
Do you tell that to every guest that comes on here? It's like, no, don't tell anyone else, but
no, this is my, I just find it fascinating. But, let's pivot here. I want to talk about Pantheon, and then I want to talk about Service Titan, and then come back to Lee's and some of your other things you have going on. I didn't attend Pantheon. Many people did. It seemed like everybody did. It seemed that the, I mean, coming off of a couple years of no meetings, the energy, everything just looked incredible. For those that did not attend Pantheon, what were some of the major themes, takeaways, or what should I have left Pantheon feeling about the industry, about ServiceTitan, about my business?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that it's in the pictures, you'll see it, and this isn't really a theme, but they held it in the Coliseum at the LA Coliseum, which is, you know, the Olympics has been held there. It's where USC plays, and Vahe used to go to USC. He loved that place. So when you walk in, it was like, wow, this is kind of the meeting of the century kind of thing. I mean, just there's literally a flame going in the Olympic cauldron. There's, you know, you're kind of getting excited. And I would say walking in as a contractor, I used to say this about Pantheon, it was always like the Disneyland of contracting. Like I just love, and it's not honestly for me as a contractor, even before I came to ServiceTitan, it wasn't about the ServiceTitan, you know, training meetings. I mean, we only had one day, they had a lot of ServiceTitan trainings. The other one are just thought leadership and speakers from the industry and that kind of stuff. But the biggest thing for me was always like the networking. Okay. Because at most conferences, you get maybe one or two big companies at a conference, and then the rest are small companies, which there's nothing wrong with a lot of small companies, you know, $2 to $3 million of revenue, just hundreds of them everywhere. And that's where most of our industry is. Usually at the $2 to $3 million revenue range, you're big enough that you can afford to go to a conference. But our industry is mostly made up of shops that are $1 million or less on the, you know, there's very few, it's like 0.5% to 0.25% that make it past 10 million revenue. Mm-hmm. So finding contractors, when I was at, you know, my first Pantheon, I think I was at maybe 9 million in revenue. But I wanted to see the guys that were 100 million and 500 million and $1 billion of revenue. I want to learn from them. And I still learn from the guys even at $500,000 revenue. But for the people that are at the huge rates, to see them and be like, wow, you know, let me hear your story about how you went from here to there. I couldn't get that at the other conferences that much. But at Pantheon, especially with ServiceTitan, it is, you know, a software that was built for the large companies. We're trying to get better and better at making it better and better for the smaller ones, and get down into that, you know, $2 million or less range, the $1 million or less range actually, and make it smoother and easier for them to set up so that they can participate as well. But at Pantheon, since you've got those contractors that are on it and it really has become this networking place, the big companies show up, and not only just the big companies, the CEOs of those big companies, the CFOs, the chief operating officers are showing up. We had multiple there, and ServiceTitan tries to facilitate it and make it so they have areas where they can meet with smaller shops and network and talk. And we had conference room sets up for them so they could just take a side group off the side and just chat about things. It was really cool. I went into a few of those and just to see some of these big contractors just giving so much of their knowledge and sharing it was just awesome. That to me is the cool. You're walking into this Coliseum and you feel like almost like the, you know, like a Titan, like somebody or a Olympian coming to like train and talk and do that stuff. And that was, really hit that. But then the themes really this year came down to, at the end of the day, we released what we call Titan Intelligence, which is not a feature inside ServiceTitan, but a theme throughout ServiceTitan. There you go. Yeah. And, the data science teams were really on display there. I think you and I did a podcast while I was in Armenia, if I remember right.
Yes. Yep.
That was the data science. There's a data science team in Armenia that was standardizing all our data in ServiceTitan so that we could see, they spent the first 9 months doing nothing but building a machine learning algorithm that would read every invoice that everyone puts into ServiceTitan. And it could tell now we're up to 98% accuracy. If it's a commercial residential job, if it's plumbing, heating, electrical, garage door, water treatment, whatever, it can tell if it's service, install, maintenance, sales, it can read your invoice and figure that out and then standardize that regardless of what you call your business unit, your job type or whatever, which means now that ServiceTitan's data is very, very, very strong. It took us a long time to do that. And once we had that though, now we can tell things like how many commercial plumbing maintenance calls were ran last year. We know how much the average ticket was. We know how much that average ticket grew. We know all those things. So now we can start giving contractors that are using ServiceTitan a lot of insight into what's going on. So now all the features, we're literally just scratching the surface on what can be done. But now the features in ServiceTitan, we're building in that artificial intelligence. So in marketing, we can start looking at like, hey, what people do you want to target? Which areas are most likely to sell this type of, you know, if you want to put in, let's say, sewer pipe systems, what areas do you want to hit in your town that are going to be most likely to hit that? We have a ton of data on that. And we have our price book now. You can see, like, given in an area, what's the average price with you versus your competitors? Are you higher or lower than them? Because we know that this is on average across the US, this is what it sells for, because our system can read every invoice and see what that is and basically standardize it. So we are building that in right now, and that's probably the biggest thing in Pantheon.
If you think about the roadmap and you think about the product enhancements and what's kind of coming out of the next 18 or 24 months, and that window may be smaller, but is the marketing insight element the most actionable or the most exciting? Like, where does the data gathering intersect with something that the contractor really cares about that they can understand and use?
Yeah. Couple things. Marketing definitely is for you and some other people, it might be the most exciting for me. It's exciting for me, maybe not the most. I will tell about it. Like, the biggest thing is we have tied our data back to Google. So now we will be able to export our conversion rates, our average tickets and everything back to Google Ads, so that basically Google can optimize for what ads are working and what are not, which is to do a lot of contractors having to manually do that right now. Most contractors aren't doing it at all. If we can do that, now all of a sudden our rate of return on PPC and Google local service ads and other things just skyrockets, which is awesome.
Right.
And that's pretty cool. But then they're adding on to that. We will be able to automatically look at capacity inside ServiceTitan. And because we have the data on how fast capacity fills up and how quickly it slows down, and we have that aggregated, we can tell, okay, your capacity is filling up. We need to start throttling down your Google campaigns automatically to try to save you marketing dollars. We won't be replacing marketing agencies in this case. What we want to do is we're actually certifying agencies now to become ServiceTitan certified providers, so they can set it up with you, and your agency that does your search engine optimization, whatever, is there, but then they can set your ads and then have that throttling automatically start taking over, so they can just start pulling back. There's some cool things happening in marketing that we're excited about. But outside of that, at least roadmap wise, the things that I'm getting excited about is one of these called Enterprise Hub. It's coming out. So if you have multiple locations or multiple cities, whatever, you can have roll up reporting, to one thing. You can do multi-tenant call centers. So you can have your call center serving multiple locations or multiple tenants in ServiceTitan, at once. There's for larger companies, what we call flat file accounting. So if you want to switch to SAP or Oracle or some different accounting system, those things are all coming out so that they'll be able to connect to those. We've actually got that back end opened up so that that can actually happen right now. The integration has to be custom built on each one, but they can do it without having ServiceTitan get involved. You can say, hey, look, I want to hire a third party company that's going to build out for SAP or Oracle. Those are cool. On the, for the smaller companies, really, the price insights, we have automatically in Pricebook Pro now, smart recommendations that say, hey, kind of like when you go on to Amazon and Amazon's using AI to figure out like, hey, if you bought this, you probably would like this too. We can do that in your price book now because we have the data in ServiceTitan. So it'll say, hey, if they're buying I've already talked a lot about plumbing, let's say air conditioning. If they're, if they're buying a compressor, they're probably going to need a contact or two. Let's recommend this. Or if they're getting a new system, hey, we should probably add on this indoor air quality system. And it'll just start automatically looking at that and putting it at the bottom of the screen saying, hey, right to the salesperson or technician, hey, you should probably add this on, just because it already knows what goes together.
You mentioned that the biggest segment of the market are contractors under $1 million. I think I'm quoting that least roughly.
Oh yeah. It's 80%. 80% of contractors don't make it past $1 million of revenue.
Is part of your growth strategy as you move down market to just capture more of that market? And what is the strategy to help more contractors that are in that segment of the market?
Yeah, a couple things. One is that we Service Titan's fastest way to growth and most profitable way is not to go sell new contractors. I'd hate to say it. It's cool. We want as many people to benefit off the platform as possible. But just as a business person, and I think all contractors can understand this, is that, hey, if I sell a new contractor on Service Titan, I've got to pay a salesperson a commission. I've got to pay a bunch of onboarding fees to have them onboarded. I've got to pay all these things out of pocket to get this contractor up and running and happy. But then there's another way Service Titan can grow, which is our existing customers, our existing contractors. If, let's say, they add 10 technicians this year because they grew really quickly and they're happy, Service Titan, you pay per managed technician, right? So for us, our most cost-effective way to grow is to basically help our contractors grow.
Yep.
It's not just idealistic. It's actually very much practical. It's, you know, Vahe explained to me when I first got to Service Titan, he's like, Tom, I mean, selling Service Titan to a bunch of contractors is really cool, but I would, you know, I would love to just have our existing contractors really grow really fast. And the average company on Service Titan last year grew 25%. Which is, I mean, that is mind blowing to think about. That's the average. And even on the, you know, we didn't get into commercial till about a year ago. Our average commercial contractor grew 16% last year. That's during COVID. So it's what we really like to do is build features and benefits that help contractors grow and help them get what they need and get more profitable and those kind of things. So that's the strategy. It's, yes, we do want it to make it easier. So if those smaller contractors go in, but really the right now it's mostly three technicians in the field and one office person and up that we really target. We're just trying to make it easier for them. And we've already been selling to those for a long time. So we just want to make it that onboarding process better, faster, more efficient, have a lot more out of the box stuff built into the product so that you don't have to set up as much when you get on it. And we've been actually pretty successful in shortening that onboarding time for a while. For the past year, we've been working on it, and it used to take a small contractor like that months to onboard. Now, if someone signs up today, that's a, you know, four technician with one office staff, we can actually, from the time we actually start onboarding them to the time we're live is a couple of weeks now instead of a couple of months. And we have a lot more out of the box stuff, but we need to keep pushing that and keep going down that road.
Where do you as an individual, and maybe this is more of, you know, a question for your team and your leadership team, where do you feel the most pressure right now?
The interesting thing is I never thought of it this way till I got to Service Titan, but you really, COVID hit a couple months after I got here. And I was running my businesses and I'm like freaking out because I've never seen a worldwide pandemic happen and what's going to happen. And, that was worrisome, but we also realized, hey, Ara called me, he's a CEO and he hits the mill, and I said, Tom, we've got to get our contractors through this. And, we got to help as much as we can. Like they're out fighting, but he kind of explained to me and I see it now. It's like, if they're out fighting the war in hand to hand combat, like we're the manufacturers of the weapons and the equipment they need to fight the war. So you better start building as fast and as strong as you can if you want your contractors to win this war, because you know, at the time we didn't know how much the market was going to change, and we want to make sure our contractors are getting as much of that market as possible. So he's like, whatever it takes to help them do it. And so we started writing this contractor playbook with a bunch of articles that we could publish. We published what the call volumes were happening across the country, what our cancellation rates were. So if you saw, oh, wow, Washington State just shut down, California just shut down, I live in, you know, I don't know, Nebraska. What if Nebraska shuts down? I want to see what happens to those call volumes. Even we started putting on webinars that had nothing to do with Service Titan. It was like, how to apply for PPP loans. We had 1,100 contractors show up to that webinar. It was, and we were doing webinars like every week with different contractors talking about how they're getting through it. And it was a lot of pressure, but I realized like, hey, just give them the tools that they're trained soldiers that fight and they've been fighting their whole lives. They're going to figure this out. But if we can give them the best tools, they're going to grow. So now the next thing is, you know, COVID's been going for a while. And pretty much to the point where most people are just, we've gotten to the state of normalcy, right? Whatever normal is. Now we look and we see that the stock market is down 27%. New housing sales in the month of April were down 17%. Or 16%. They're supposed to be down like 1.7 or 1.6. Can't remember. The numbers are pretty close to those. Anyway, we know that there's a market correction happening right now. And again, it's like, okay, let's make sure the contractors have what they need. Let's at least the best we can. And we're going to fail sometimes, but let's push through and give them everything we've got. And that's what I'm feeling pressure about right now is like, hey, how do we keep making sure we're going to grow? We actually, during COVID, Service Titan actually exceeded its annual plan on new sales and things like that and growth. And it's really comes down to those contractors that were fighting on the front lines and like took a really negative thing and turned it into something that boosted their businesses and grew. And I mean, I was like literally in tears after, they came out with our revenue numbers and not the revenue for Service Titan, how much we made, the revenue for our contractors, how much they made. And I was just like, you know, those first couple of months were terrifying. And then you saw all these people that just rebounded and just took off. And I was like blown away.
During that period of time, I'm imagining you have your head down, you're getting to work. It's super intense. You don't know what's around the corner with regulation and with the market and with people even letting your customers into their home. When you look back on that period of time now, which of these three things made the biggest gains? Was it the brand, Service Titan? Was it the community or was it the actual product?
I would say I don't think the brand, I mean, the brand is what it is, but I'd say two things. One is the community. Mm-hmm. Really, I mean, those webinars and the things that were going out on rapid fire, I mean, we had contractors showing up and say, hey, this is working for me. And Aaron Gaynor, this is working for me in Ohio. Want me to tell people about it? Yeah, let's get on a webinar and let's talk about it. He had 600 or 700 contractors show up for that. We had, contractors from Texas. We actually, Keith McCurry is working with Radiant. They got on and said, hey, this is working for us. Let's talk about it. I'm like, great. That community there really took off. Mm-hmm. Service Titan just launched Service Titan Community at Pantheon. Part of it is because we saw how valuable this is. We also saw we have a Facebook group called Service Titan Masterminds. Problem with Facebook is like we don't have evergreen content where if someone posts something, you go search for it easily. So we came out Service Titan Community, built it into the product so contractors could help each other. I mean, Service Titan's biggest asset is the contractors that have that knowledge and are willing to share it. So that helped a ton. And I think the other piece is in the product, Vahe came in, COVID hits, he stood up, Vahe's the president. So Ara works on like the finance, the sales, the marketing, that kind of stuff. Ara, by the way, was a programmer as well. They both were. But then Vahe works on like the product and engineering and that kind of stuff. Anyway, Vahe came into the engineering teams and stop whatever you're doing. You know, COVID's hit. Let's build as fast as we can to make a contactless experience so we could like contractors can go into customers' homes and not have them touch their iPad, that kind of thing to get signatures. Let's build everything we can for what we call the COVID product release. This never happens at Service Titan because roadmaps have to be planned a year in advance and they have to, you know, you have to set aside engineers for them and whatever. And everybody just stopped what they're doing and hustled for what we call a 6-week period, which is a release cycle, which we would call three sprints, 3 2-week sections. And they built like crazy. We literally had multiple people saying, hey, as soon as it's over, I'm going to take 2 days off. Like I can't, I've stayed up all night. I've done all this stuff to get through. So we had our COVID product releases the end of April. The shutdown happened like March 14th in California and then went across the country. 6 weeks to build all these features. We burned out engineers like crazy. But all of a sudden our contractors had tools that they didn't have before. We even had that's when we came out with this thing called, the Office Activities Report. If you're in ServiceNow and you have it, you haven't used this, search in reports called Office Activities. It basically, everyone was sending their CSRs to work from home and everybody worked from home, but you couldn't tell if they're working. Right. So the product team built this report that looks at everything you do in ServiceTitan all day and shows when you're working and when you're not. And all of a sudden you could just be like, hey, you know, Jimmy, the CSR didn't take a call or didn't click a button for 3 hours in the middle of the day because he took a 3-hour lunch. And so now you could start managing your team remotely. That was all built in that 6-week period. Yeah. Like I said, the context of experience was in there. Yeah. We even had a backup phone system because all the phones were dying. And people thought it was ServiceTitan's fault. At that time, phones were going down like every 3 days. And what it was the phone companies were overloaded and couldn't, like AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, they're all having these issues because they couldn't handle the new volume. So we built the call rollover where you can roll it over to a cell phone, up to 10 cell phones. Yeah. And they built it in 6 weeks. So it really helped out.
Do you ever feel pressure from customers? And I'll ask this a different way. I will sometimes read comments in user groups and some user might say, ServiceTitan, you need to do this, or ServiceTitan, you did this. And I tell my product team, I'm like, hey guys, just so you know what's around the corner, when you get to a couple thousand customers, your product team gets kicked in the face every day. How do you manage that in the communities and keep the brand protected?
Oh man, it's that is the hardest thing. Because when I got ServiceTitan, first meeting is the first night. Ara had called a meeting. It was 6 o'clock at night. I remember it was like dark outside, or 6:30, because it's, you know, it was like January when I got there. We're sitting down and I had just had all this bottled up frustration. I've got the whole, you know, there's like 100 people in this meeting. And I've got their ear, and I'm a contractor now. And I took every opportunity. I actually got in trouble from HR because I went in there and went overboard a little bit. And I remember saying, like, they asked about a certain feature or product that we should be working on. And I was like, that just makes me want to slap somebody in the face because they clearly don't know what they're doing. You know, and Vi's like, could you not say that? Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, it's probably not good. This is California. I'm going to get in a lot of trouble. Anyway, as a contractor, like, all this frustration comes out. And then what I learned was that it's not – in some cases, yes, they built things that no one was ever going to use, or they built something that was just off base and somebody missed it. And that's because we didn't have contractors inside ServiceTitan at the time. Now we literally have like 100 people that have worked in the industry, and we have 4 of them that own businesses. Yeah. And that advise the product team now. So we've reduced the things that they don't use at all. At least the stuff they're building. But a lot of times they're building things that, like, a certain group of contractors with inside ServiceTitan that desperately needed, or some, they made a contract with a large customer that wanted XYZ way and we can't figure out why it is. Or they're building something that they have to build this and it gets released. And you're like, why in the world did you do that? And then you find out, oh, they're building it this because in the future they need this other thing that we all want. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so I went a little overboard in that first meeting, and then a lot of things started making sense to me. But nowadays, the reality is we do need to be listening to our customers on the things that they want. But especially with limited resources, we've got engineers in Armenia. We've got engineers in North Macedonia. We had engineers in Russia. We had engineers in, you know, tons of them in the U.S. We don't go to these, people think, oh, you're going to these other countries for cheaper engineers. That's not really the case. The reason is because there's a shortage of engineers.
Sure.
Yeah. There's literally only so many that you can hire. And when you have a limited resource, you have to pick the most important features to come out with next. And sometimes, and also contractors are like, but why'd you build this one stupid thing over here? It's like, well, it's because that engineer only works on this piece of the product and we didn't have something for that piece of the product they could do right now. So we said, okay, might as well just build this one thing that some contractors want and build it. Whereas, like, for instance, phones, you can't go, especially something as critical as phones, take somebody that works on like mobile app development and say, hey, you're working on phones now. Hope you figure it out really well and just build XYZ. And oh yeah, make sure it doesn't break and make sure all contractors are happy. So it's like, if you only have 8 engineers on phones, you got to do that. So we have to manage those as best we can. It's difficult and tell contractors they are being hurt because they are. If you go on Thursday, you go into the masterminds group, you're being hurt. Trust me. We've got listeners that sit there and comb through all that stuff all the time. And we just need to keep going and, you know, taking that product feedback into account. And trust me, as a guy that has six companies all on ServiceTitan, there are things that I desperately want. And Tom Howard does not get any special treatment when it comes to like, hey, this has to be built. They're like, okay, that's cool, but here's the roadmap and here's why we're building what we're building. So
as you view a potential IPO, I guess we can talk about that on here. That's been published that at least you're preparing. Do you feel more pressure from investors and then in the future, you know, potential public shareholders? What is the environment like with those three letters kind of hanging in the air?
Well, I have to be super careful in what I say and don't say here. The reality is that there may never be an IPO. There could be, there could not be. That's all I can say there. I can't comment further on that piece. Yep. But what I can comment on is I've talked with the founders a lot. I've talked with the executive team. I've talked with the board. And for all of them, if it was an IPO or if it was a private round of fundraising or it was just going profitable and just earning profits there and slowing down growth, things like that. Like, and by the way, in software, it's you typically slow down growth to increase profits. So you have to trade off on that. Because if I hire 100 engineers this year, that doesn't, you know, to build some really cool stuff, you get paid out on that long term, as you know, building SaaS products. Mm-hmm. For those listening, SaaS is service, software as a service. And when we talk about that, they do not see 100%. They do not see a IPO or a round of funding or something like that as a win or as a finish line or as something like that. To them, it's kind of a side note because it's only there to help you accomplish the main goal. And the main goal is building these products that keep getting better, faster, stronger. You know, 15 years ago, there wasn't an investment group out there that was looking to invest in software for contractors on a large scale because they literally said they're not big enough, they're not sophisticated enough, they're not smart enough, the market's not big enough. Blah. There's 82 reasons why they weren't going to invest in this. Mm-hmm. Arun Vahe really, they were the first ones that came out and said, look, no, we're going to make a really awesome product, like way and start building tools that like these Fortune 500 companies have, and we're going to give them to contractors and contractors are going to be able to pay for it. And these tools are very expensive to build. It's shocking to me how much time, effort, energy, money it takes to build some of these features. And what they did is they, you know, now, you know, the amount of money that's been invested into them. And there's a lot of investment firms that have paid a lot of money in to become investors in ServiceTitan because they see it now.
Right.
They don't, sure, Arun Vahe, smart guys, whatever. That's not why they're investing though. What they're investing is they see that contractors aren't these backwoods hillbillies that can't support real businesses. What they're seeing is these contractors are doing amazing things, growing at incredible rates, building awesome businesses in the middle of COVID, you know, I mean, they're like, oh my gosh, this is growing. It's growing fast. So Arun Vahe's vision has been, look, let's build this all-encompassing thing that makes contractors have tools that they didn't have access to before. No one really wanted to build for them before because they didn't feel like they're worth it. If they keep doing that, if it's an IPO or a private round of fundraising or whatever, those are just things that are there to help that. You know, that's the end game. And people ask me all the time, if ServiceTitan does an IPO or if they do this big round of funding or whatever, what are Arun Vahe going to do after that? I'm like, what do you mean? What are they going to do after that? They see as like, oh, like they're going to be retiring. I'm like, no,
they can do that now.
Yeah. They can do that now. But two is that, you know, like did Steve Jobs retire from Apple because Apple was a public company? Like, no, like that's not, just because public people can buy your stock doesn't mean that you shouldn't be running your company anymore. Right. And quite frankly, I mean, look at the markets right now. I mean, my gosh, the stock market is down like 27% year to date or something like that. Yeah. And tech companies are hit the hardest. So it's just once those companies are out there that are public right now, they've got a lot of pressure on them to worry about the stock market and things like that. And we don't have that pressure right now. That's actually kind of nice.
What do you think the historical view of ServiceTitan is? And to take that question a step further, you know, you're starting to see people from big name brands step away from companies like LinkedIn and you name it, people coming out of Harvard Business School and Yale that are now joining ServiceTitan. You know, it's kind of ceremonial that this is all taking place in California where technology companies kind of thrive. What's your view on ServiceTitan as it relates to like other brands who've been unicorns in SaaS? Like, what's it look like now and what will it look like 5 or 10 years from now?
It's hard for me to see when I got ServiceTitan. You know, Ara, the CEO, was always telling me like, you're not thinking big enough. And I was like, gosh, you know, and I realized in my own business as a contractor, like, I hope whoever's listening here is not listening to this as like a ServiceTitan growth thing. Like, think of your own business and think like, you could think bigger too. Ken Goodrich told me, he said, man, last year he had bought his private jet the year before he was talking to me. And he said, I bought my jet and that's the last goal I had was to buy a private jet. And now I've hit all the goals that I set in my life. And I was like, wow. He's like, you know what I regret? I regret that like I didn't have bigger goals because I would have hit those too. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, you know, Ken, that's a really good piece of input there. And I think with Ara, he says, yeah, like, he was really pushing me to start thinking bigger and stronger. And, you know, I started thinking like, gosh, if ServiceTitan kept growing, imagine an idea where ServiceTitan now has the data to do this. What if we could see automatically if a tech is going out and has really high callback rates on thermostatic expansion valves? Mm-hmm. Cause those get misdiagnosed all the time. If I have the AC contractors on here listening, like, oh my gosh, every time, you know, it's always the TXV's fault, right?
Always.
And they go out there and ServiceTitan could diagnose that and say, okay, this technician needs a training on thermostatic expansion valves because they're not doing it. They're either misdiagnosing. It could have been, you know, a clogged filter dryer. It could have been, you know, low on charge. It could have been a lot of things, but they keep misdiagnosing or maybe they're installing it wrong. But we could automatically have a training that comes up, automatically pops up to them, trains the technician on how to do it. Redoes it. You know, there's just so many cool things that could be built. There's other stuff that I really wish I could talk about, but I can't. Sure. But I mean, we get into it and I'm like, wow, this could get really big. So, and now, like you mentioned, there's a lot of people coming over, like the, our new chief technical officer came from Salesforce, and Salesforce is a much larger company than ServiceTitan, but they just haven't focused on contracting and haven't gotten in there. So he came over and, we have a guy that just came over named Sender. He came from Splunk. They were a $20 billion market cap company. And he was a chief product officer. And he came over and I'm like, why did you come here? And I'm not realizing that ServiceTitan is a big and becoming well-known company in tech now. I'm like, right. The heck, we're a contracting thing. And he's like, Tom, I want to be part of this. And he's like, Tom, you don't understand what's happening here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa. I mean, that's kind of mind-boggling to me about what's going on. And I think people think ServiceTitan is big right now. They have no idea. It's not about selling new companies because really on the larger companies, we have most of that market share already. Hmm. For at least plumbing, electrical and HVAC, most of the large companies in the US are already on ServiceTitan. When I say large companies, like $30 million and up. So it's not about that. It's about what we can do and expand into helping contractors get farther and farther and farther into that pipeline that makes them more and more and more efficient. It's really kind of impressive. I can't go into too much of it, but when I start thinking about it, and just so I put this out there so no one's worried about it, ServiceTitan has no intent to ever go buy contracting businesses, go compete with competitors, at least. That's not the intent of ServiceTitan. That's not a growth path. That's not our plan. We want to empower those people that are growing their own businesses, but there are a lot of things we have in the pipeline that could really, really, really benefit a lot of contractors nationwide. So as those things get bigger, I thought, wow, what if it gets to the point where, you know, well, it already is getting to the point where we can start attracting the talent from those top, you know, performers in other industries. And now they're coming, adding their expertise. Our routing person that built a lot of our routing engines came from routing from Google and other places. And it's like, okay, well, this is awesome. Look at what we can do now to put tools in the hands of contractors that we couldn't do before we had that recognition.
Is it a vulnerable experience when you bring in really, really top tier talent from really well-ran organizations and you let them behind the curtain and you're like, yeah, here's this department. We've been kind of winging it. The password is password. Like, is that a vulnerable experience for you? The question I'm really trying to ask here, it's for the business owner who might be afraid to bring on for lack of a better description, a Harvard MBA or someone from LinkedIn or Salesforce into their business, which is a stretch. But what's that experience like when you broaden your leadership circle and you're about to find out that you've been doing things wrong?
It's kind of like going to this is one of those things where I got to service side, and I remember sitting down at the table, and I'm a contractor, right? I think like a contractor. I talk like a contractor. You know, I don't have a master's degree. So I walk in, I sit down at the table, and I look to the guy to my left. It was a guy named Chris Trombetta. He's the chief people officer. The guy looks like freaking Captain America. He was in the Army, went to West Point, was in for 4 years, got out of West Point, goes to Harvard Business School, works, goes way up the executive ladder at Red Bull.
Probably McKinsey or Bain right from there, right?
Actually, yes.
Yeah, I know those stories.
Yeah, so literally, yes, he worked at McKinsey. So anyway, I'm like, okay, there's Chris to my left. Super cool guy, by the way. Totally humble. Doesn't make me feel like an idiot sitting next to him. Then I look to my right, and I've got, you know, David Bird. He's a CFO. Came from Netflix. Also Harvard MBA. And I'm like, okay. You know, I'm going around. I'm looking around the table. And I'm supposed to be paying attention here, but I'm a contractor. My attention span is like 3 seconds. And now I'm thinking about other stuff. I can't tell you how many times, by the way, I've spoken up a meeting. I just see their faces go like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe he just said that. So anyway, you know, and I start realizing like, gosh, these guys are so Stanford, UCLA. I'm going through all the ones in my head as I go around the table, you know, Wharton Business School, you know, Wharton, which is, that's where Connor went to school. And so I'm looking around the table. I'm like, crap, like, these are some heavy hitters. And really, 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 not just that they went to those schools, but like, the contribution that they make in these meetings is really insightful. And I'm like, dang. The reality is those people raise you up, right? Those people make you work harder, make you think smarter. And with anyone thinking about bringing them into their contracting business, it happens with consultants all the time. When I was consulting for air conditioning companies, it's like, let's not tell them this, let's not tell them that. It's kind of like going to the doctor and lying. It's like, look, I know it's embarrassing, but like, just tell the truth so we can get to the bottom of this. You know, whatever those spots are growing on your whatever it is, like, trust me, you want to get rid of that. Let's just be honest and let's get it on the table. Let's get it fixed, right? I would much rather be embarrassed and make a profit than not be embarrassed because I can hide it and not make a profit because I'm not going to tell them what's really going on just so they can't fix it.
Oh, that's so good. Well, I want to go back to something. I think you said Ara said this to you, to think bigger. If you're in a contracting business today, HVAC, plumbing, electrical, whatever it is, Lees or Fetchatech, how can you think bigger at the contractor level today? Give me some examples of ways that you can kind of expand your thinking or change your filter.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you know, I mean, you guys are doing some cool stuff at Contractor Commerce. And being that I'm coming on this podcast, like, gosh, you know, Paul and I talked a while ago, we didn't go down that road, and I actually started texting my call host Sway, by the way, at Lee's, please, this week, just call the office, tell me you need to talk to us. Okay. Tom Howard was on my podcast, so I need to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'm texting about it today as well. But I mean, you guys are doing things like, we can sit here and complain about online sales and online this and online that. And, you know, Google's taking us, or Amazon's taking and ruining contracting. The reality is that Amazon's not going away. Okay. Right. Like, Amazon's not a fad. Google's not a fad. The internet's not a fad. So if you're you know, strategy has been complain and wait it out. Like, it's not, it's probably not an effective strategy. You probably need to think about it head on and say, hey, how can I take advantage of this situation? Maybe you do want to sell in the home, but maybe you want to offer something online to get you in the door and then upsell from there. Start thinking about growth strategies. I mean, not only about different features and benefits and things you could offer, but gosh, just thinking about what's possible. Lance Bachman from OneSEO has given a speech. I have no ties, so I'm not endorsing for some reason, but he just gave a great speech and he just said, look, like, you need to ask yourself, why not me? And so I think when you go look at these other contractors that are doing really well, ask yourself, why not me? One of the most inspiring things that I ever did was I was sitting and talking to Dave Geiger at Horizon, and he told me in 2004 they were doing like $8 million in revenue. And I was like, my eyes got real big. I mean, I don't know. They're probably $800 million this year. Mm-hmm. So 100 times bigger. And I'm like, well, I'm at that size. That means I could be that big.
Right.
I started, you know, when you really start thinking about it, Lee's in Fresno, we had a 40% average growth rate. And I just put it into my calculator, a financial calculator here. And I said, look, let's just say I only grew like 30%, or I think probably down to 20% per year for the next 12 years until I'm age 50. It was like almost $300 million of revenue. And that's with decreasing my growth rate. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. And I think if contractors really sat back and thought about the fact that these people that are growing and making huge businesses, they're like you and me. Like, right. they put their pants on one leg at a time. Like, they used to be our size. And quite frankly, many times it's not that long ago. I was talking to Chris Hoffman from Hoffman Brothers a couple weeks ago. Like 6 years ago, they're at $10 million in revenue. This year, they're going to do like $80 million. You know? I'm like, dang.
Without investment, right?
And Yeah. And they didn't take on a third party private equity firm. They do greenfield and everything. They're just growing organically. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, I'm looking at Chris. I'm like, no offense, bro, but you're not that smart.
That's the reality. Yeah.
He really is a massively intelligent individual. But the reality of the situation is, it's like, he just went and did it. He went and executed. He did what a lot of us aren't doing. And I'm like, gosh, like, why don't we just execute? Like, why don't we just do it? And so I think if you can think bigger like that and realize, like, you're capable of more than you thought. David Goggins has a great book. If you haven't read it, I would highly recommend reading it, called Can't Hurt Me. Mm-hmm. And the guy runs like ultra marathon stuff. He's been, took Navy SEAL training 3 times. He went through Army Ranger training, Delta Force training, all that stuff. The guy, like, literally just does some of the most amazing things. And he said, when you feel like you've pushed yourself as hard as you can go and you feel like you're about to pass out and die, you're at about 20% capacity. You got about 80% left in the tank. I was like, oh my gosh. I think, yeah, if we start looking at it, realizing, like, gosh, think, like, realize you can get so much bigger. You can do great. And bigger might not be, by the way, might not be more revenue. Maybe it's like, I want to own a house on the beach in Hawaii. I want to do whatever. Like, there are people that have done it. That means you
can be done.
Yeah.
What a perfect note to end on. So I'll ask you one more question, because I know we're running tight on time, and it's man, the sun is almost up out there. So you need to get to work. As you think about your portfolio of businesses, you have 6 contracting businesses you own, correct?
Yeah.
And what are you most excited about? Which market, which team? Fetchatech seems new and interesting. I've talked to some folks over there before. I think they're a client of ours right now. So thank you, by the way. But tell me about Fetchatech or any of the businesses. What are you most excited about as a contractor right now?
I think, yeah, Fetchatech is the one that I'm most excited about right now. It's that I've always heard that if you have a great team, like, that, then you can do anything. And honestly, the team out there, it just kind of came together so fast. I mean, my other teams are great, but it took a long time to get there. In Las Vegas, we took 3 companies that were all struggling last year. We as a team, I have a lot of partners out there. I only own 26.6%, but who's counting? And the rest of the partners, I think we got five of them share the rest of the shares. But we put this amazing team together super fast. Brent Buckley out there is killing it. And a lot of people know him because he's very voracious online. He's great at sales. But then Dennis Thompson, you know, is an awesome operator out there. We got Dan Antonelli doing, he actually owns a share. He's doing some of the branding. The Flint Group out there is with us. You know, Jerry Finney owned one of them. We're all partners out there. And it really, last year, if you put the three companies together, there's a negative $1 million in EBITDA, basically, right, on $11 million of revenue. And that company this year should do about $22 million of revenue with $5 million of EBITDA in 1 year turnaround. And I don't have enough time to run businesses. I've got a, you know, I'm working full time at Service Titan, and I did help with going out there for the first 2 months. It was like every week I was out there working with them, and it was fun to work as a team and really feel like we had our backs against the wall and to figure this out, how to turn it around. And they just, you know, we built budgets and forecasts, and we made business plans, and we got trucks, and we, yeah, I personally guaranteed a bunch of those trucks, so I'm kind of scared now. But they start executing, and to grow that fast, it just feels awesome to be on a winning team that's going to turn that kind of a profit in 1 year and make something happen. Just awesome.
Congratulations. And also congratulations to Mario on your team, who I think has lost, I don't know, 120 pounds or he's got more to go. And he'll be a guest on here. I want to hear his journey. That guy, like the humility and the grit. I mean, he's like you. I get up on the East Coast and he's already posting pictures of himself, like shirtless in the gym, like covered in sweat. Like, what are you doing today? Like the David Goggins of HVAC.
Yeah. He's the David Goggins of install management. It's like a really cool guy. Mario's like, and he's always happy too when he comes to the office. So yeah, great guy.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. This was so generous. I know you've got a big long day ahead of you. So listeners, if you want to connect with Tom, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Email me at thoward@servicetitan.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tom. This episode, like all episodes, is brought to you by Contractor Commerce, plug-and-play online stores for contractors. We see a future where every contractor has an online store.